Hey, we're doing it, huh?
Yeah, I think we are. We're ready to go.
I like when that music does that thing, and then I know just when to come in on it, right?
Yeah.
On that. Right on. And then boom,
we
come in.
And we're here.
Yeah.
And we're back.
And we're in.
Nice.
So that's fun.
Welcome back, everyone.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming back.
Welcome back. And right up front, we'll ask you, hey, please email us or you know, Twitter
tweet
us.
Or
what
Reddit.
Do you say?
Tweet at us. DM us, I guess.
Yeah. Facebooks, Instagrams.
Yeah. Reddit.
Whole Nine Yards Pod. Reddit, the fourth or fifth page of the internet. And
the Facebook, you said? Whole Nine Yards Podcast.
Yeah, we're
right?
Everywhere. Yeah. You want to be like that credit card. So,
yes.
Yeah. Hit us up with good news or other thoughts.
Yeah. Yes. Sweet. I'm going to kick us off then.
Kick us off in our umbrella. Tell us all.
Yes. Is we're doing happy things.
Happy.
Yeah. Happy words or pleasing feelings.
All right.
I'm going to start us off with pleased as punch.
Okay, I think I might say that once in a while,
yeah.
But I don't know.
It's a lovely phrase in your mind. But like we said, they're kind of all under this umbrella of happy, joy-filled, a sense of delight. a satisfaction, I will say, a grand sense of satisfaction in your deeds is a leading definition. This phrase comes to us from the land of hand puppetry.
Come on.
I guess, it does, yeah. Specifically, a duo named Punch and Judy.
Oh.
Yeah. Which, I'm going to give you some background on Punch and Judy just to get there.
Yeah, I got. I have some. Go ahead.
That's fine. So these Punch and Judy shows started just as Punch shows. The puppet shows gained popularity in the 1600s in Europe and Great Britain, it seems like a lot. And it seems like they're also still seen in Britain as street performers. I saw videos mid-2000s posted on YouTube of these shows.
Yeah.
The character of Punch is based on a character slash puppet, Pulcinella, which is an Italian commedia dell'arte. Character.
Yes.
Which at the time was a blend of two other characters that they used, that improv groups would use to perform farces. They kind of had a set of characters that people knew and that they would pull from in these improvs. Does that make sense?
Yes.
These farces that they put on. He's a blend of two of those characters.
All right.
I'll tell you who those are. I guess Macchus and Bucus were the characters that created Pulcinella.
So I hadn't heard that in a long time.
Yeah.
But I thought when I was younger than I am now, there was a song, like a kid's song or a song I associated with that name. What can you do, Pulcinella, Pulcinella?
Oh, yeah?
It was like that. And we can do it too, Pulcinella, Pulcinella. Yeah. Nice. I do believe that haunts me from my earlier childhood, which was haunting enough.
Do you think it was is this a widespread song or a song you know from family?
No, it had to be some widespread
okay.
song.
Yeah. Pardon me. I didn't come across that.
All right.
But nice. Yeah, this is a character from, I mean, farces of ancient Roman times based off of that in the 1600s. The characters he's based off are from the ancient Roman times. But the character Pulcinella is from, these shows are from around 1600s. And this gentleman's popped up before, Samuel Pepys. He has a diary. He's a prolific journalist.
Right.
Everybody. Seriously, like 1600s, like he just journals and you can read him. You can just go and see what he's talking about. He loves Pulcinella. He calls it Pulcinella.
Sure.
He's an English gentleman. From what I saw, he saw the show three times within a month. Again, I know there's probably not a lot happening.
Right. You would go back to that show.
Right.
Yeah.
But he says several times how much he enjoys it. It pleases him mightily, and he's very the best show he's ever seen. So it seems like this Pulcinello, as they call it, P.O., they change it, you know, spelling-wise and things, is a popular character in England then. And through that, they absorb the character into their culture, but they don't have, he doesn't have his own stories. They don't have the lore to pull from of the ancient Roman farces. You know, they don't know where he's from. They just know they like this guy.
Yeah.
So they insert him into, insert the attitude of the character into normal everyday stories, like Noah's Ark and stuff like that, I guess it sounds like. And then his brand of comedy ensues, and you know, the hijinks take off and take the story somewhere else for more people to know. Eventually, Punch gets a wife named Joan. It seems like there's a quote of someone talking about.
But Punch is still a puppet.
Puppet. Yeah. Puppets. Yeah, yeah. We're hand puppets.
He gets a puppet wife.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, we're in puppet land. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We are in hand puppet land, and we are in, like, from what I saw, single performer in a box, nice closed theater hand puppet land. Like, you're one person in there doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Punch is always depicted as evil, pretty much. Like I said, I watched a few videos that were posted from the early 2000s of just street performers in London. And then I saw a black and white video that was on YouTube from 1950s as well, which was like showing this show to American school children, it seemed like. And they were not, they seemed visibly like upset, but I'm not sure. This is like, the show is, it's like they do it for kids.
Yeah, but humor, even for kids, used to be so much darker.
I can walk you through, because these shows like there's a way they go. There's a basically just a script, and you follow the script for a Punch and Judy show. Would you like me to walk you through the show?
Yeah, with Steed.
Spoilers. Let me tell. Punch is a kind of an ugly-ish character, protruding nose, big chin, hat. Humped back, kind of like a tail thing. I don't know. I mean, it's not a tail, but it looks like something sticking out of his back, kind of.
All right.
And he sounds like, his voices sound like it's through a kazoo, like the talk, but it's actually an apparatus called a swazzle, and it seems to exist for just this purpose, to make this guy's voice. It's a reeded thing you put in your mouth that goes between your tongue and the roof of your mouth, so your voice goes through it, and it's got a kazoo effect on it, essentially.
I think I want one of them.
Yeah, they exist for this reason, I guess. And again, that's a single puppeteer, so he's moving this thing because the other characters are voiced with non-swazzled voices.
Oh, that's going to be a pain. How do you do that?
It's a skill. So like I said, the puppets interact with the kids in the audience and get them to participate with the puppet show. But it basically starts, and like I said, spoilers, it starts with him and Judy arguing about a baby. So Judy says, take care of the baby. He then kills the baby somehow. Sometimes he beats it to death or throws it or sits on it. Judy, when she comes back, is not happy about that. So he kills her next. And then a policeman shows up, and then he's got to go. So he kills the policeman next. I saw one where a clown shows up after the policeman, and I think the clown made it out okay. Maybe just like a smack. And then he goes to the judge and gets prosecuted for all the murder he's committed, and eventually faces the devil, who then he also tricks and beats to death. So after each of his murders, after each of his murders, he's very pleased with himself and says in his little kazooey voice, that's the way to do it. After he dispatches each of his victims. And he's very satisfied with his deeds.
Sure.
So the original phrase derives from the puppet show, and I guess it was proud as Punch, as he seemed so proud of his deeds, and then became pleased as Punch. In the 1797 is the first known record of that phrase. William Gifford satires the Baviad and Maviad, I believe.
Bav and Mab, I like to say.
Yeah. Oh, how my fingers itch to pull thy nose. As pleased as punch, I'd hold it in my grip. And in this usage, the word punch is capitalized because it's referencing, it's a proper noun and name. Punch, you're saying I'm as pleased as this dude who is very pleased with his actions.
Yeah.
And the OED says you should, this is how it is. It's a direct reference. Like, you should always capitalize punch in this phrase.
Huh.
Yeah. So that is the story behind that one.
Wow. So it has nothing to do with the refreshing ballroom beverage.
I don't think so. I didn't come across anything like that in here. No. I didn't see punch drinking any punch. No.
I have Jim Dandy, if that's Punch and Judy.
Oh, it's Jim Dandy.
Oh.
No, well, I don't know.
Let's just call it Dandy, because it's not really
Jim Dandy. It's not really Jim Dandy?
Oh, no. All right. Take that back. Forget.
Well, you just
forget.
Here's some amnesia dust.
No, it can be. We're going to cover Jim Dandy.
Okay.
He will not be to the rescue.
I don't get that reference.
Jim Dandy to the rescue? You don't know that song? Go, no. Jim Dandy. Go.
I don't know.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. So, Dandy.
Sorry. Yes.
Ray, tell me, if you would use Dandy, like, this is Dandy. What are you saying?
Fine and dandy like summer candy.
Fine and dandy.
I'd say things are lovely, light and breezy. Because it's got a lightness and airiness to it in my mind, right? I think things are going great.
All right, how you use it.
Things are dandy. Things are going swell.
Hunky dory.
Hunky dory. Can we use more idioms in our language?
We did hunky dory though.
I know, true.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, it was that rowboat, that Eastern European rowboat.
That's right.
Like that.
Yeah.
Let me go take you on the journey of Dandy, and it is, hoochie mama.
Okay, I'll buckle up.
Yeah, a little bit.
Get some snacks.
It seems in America, this is going to be a little bit, you ever watch Pulp Fiction or one of those movies?
I've seen some movies
Pulp
that
Fiction?
Are out of sequence.
Out of, yeah. So I'm going to go like that.
But time doesn't exist.
But not everyone's ready for that idea.
Sorry.
So this is going to go back and forth a little.
Okay. Sure.
Americans really started to embrace this in the later part of the 19th century, and it seemed to have come into our world through baseball. There were some announcements made. I don't have an announcer's name, but New York Giants 1887 seemed to be one of the places that announcers would call out, you know, hey, that we got some Jim Dandy players on this team.
Yeah.
Now
okay.
Here now take note, they are started out with saying Jim Dandy.
Yeah, they're using it
sometimes. Joe Dandy.
Okay.
But you know how we'll get a thing and then just, you know.
Try it out. See what sticks. It's new. We got to play with it.
Jack Dandy also was used, and that's a little closer to some truth that goes along with the real origin of Dandy. Mm-hmm. So I'll get you there. So as I promised, it's gonna juke around on you a little.
Yeah. Stay frosty, everybody. Yeah. We're switching timelines.
So, there's a funny thing about the real root of Dandy in that it simultaneously was sort of derisive while also simultaneously being flattery, and I'll explain.
Okay.
And I have to preface this a little bit. You know how sometimes we're digging and your shovel hits something you didn't expect.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Dandy is one of those.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just delivering information.
Sure.
And sometimes, you know, the uses and the history of our language, our ideas.
Yeah.
They're full of stuff.
Looking at them, seeing where we are, seeing how we can do better, though. It's always good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in that light, I will apologize no further and just deliver information.
Yeah.
So, Dandy was, let's say, and this is just a mid-level, I'm going to say 1823.
Okay.
We saw it sort of meaning a man who was in finery, over the top, a little or more than a little effeminate. And affected, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those definitions went as follows. A French gait, lispings, wrinkled foreheads, killing King's English, wearing immense plated pantaloons.
Pantaloons.
Ha ha ha. Coat cut away, small waistcoat, cravat and chitterlings, immense chitterlings. I don't, what? A hat small, hair frizzled and protruding.
Yeah.
So you got that picture.
Yeah.
But at the same time, literally, at the same time,
yeah,
the definition more, you know, less out of the slang world and more in the true defined world was fine, splendid, first rate.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, this is also early 1800s.
Yeah.
So you had that fine, splendid, first rate,
right.
and then someone who was perhaps annoyed or taken aback with a fellow who was a little more flamboyant, sort of twisted the word to sort of suggest that it's not so good.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But neither of those definitions won the battle, and they sort of existed simultaneously.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it exists side by side.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, we saw this way earlier. You know, I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Right.
Remember, was written by the Brits to make fun of us.
Oh, yeah, right.
I don't know if you remember that part mm-hmm. of history. They wrote it to mock us, okay?
Yeah.
And really, it didn't even make sense totally, but it's fine. I don't mind them mocking us.
No.
It's whatever. But in the terms of what the dandy would mean to mock, you'd mock somebody who was overly effeminate and affected in yeah. high finery. But we were a ragamuffin crew
yeah.
of, you know, our military and
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but they...
Settlers, yeah.
Sang that. So, oh. yeah, because macaroni...
Right.
Was a style, a Rococo period style, which was a very flamboyant thing, which loaned itself to poking fun at in that way.
Mm-hmm.
How that fits into it, because we weren't dressed up in,
right.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But
finery.
That's how they sang about it. And then somehow we took it and embraced it. And threw it back at them.
That's
like,
what
we got to yes.
do. You got to say, no, this is mine.
Yeah. So that's yeah. what they did.
Nice.
So, but I'm reminding you, that sort of dichotomy existed this whole time. And,
yeah.
and obviously that's further back in the 18th century. It's weirder and a little more grotesque than that, in that there are perversions that again walk both sides of the aisle further back. In the 1500s, even, we're talking, these roots were at that point, while there were Norse and Germanic roots, this we're talking like Northern England, Scotland,
mm-hmm.
Stuff where okay. it was more used for a dwarf or a young, insignificant person is the definition.
Okay.
And at that same time.
Yeah.
Simultaneously,
yeah.
also kind of meeting, so dandily, a pet, a darling,
yeah.
Spoiled by being made too much of. This, oh. this was still a concurrent use of the word, which was not a completely different definition. It was mm-hmm. just a perversion of the same word and yeah. definition. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
At the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's always, like you said, I mean, you did say it always existed
it, yeah.
in this both realms.
And it goes further back. But one of the things I kept coming up against in digging back through etymology was this idea that to this day there is, if a dog person, dog show type person, Dandy Dimont is a type of Scottish terrier.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
It's a dwarf leg, odd little dog.
Yeah.
And there was a book, Guy Mannering.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wait, it's called that? That's the author.
That's the name of the book,
Guy Mannering. Okay.
And I thought, oh, that's it, because there's a character in the book named...
Is it Jack?
No, he's Dandy. His name's Andrew Dandy.
Andy Dandy, everybody.
His name's Andrew DeMont.
Oh.
And he had a dog like this in the book, and then they named this dog breed Dandy DeMont. But in reading aspects of the book and the plot, I didn't read the whole book.
Sure.
He's a farmer, and he's not effeminate, nor is he dwarfy or walks funny. But the dog is dwarfing.
Yeah.
So there were characteristics of all of the definitions thrown around constantly. I don't even know if you were in a time period where this was a word you used a lot, how you'd keep straight which way you meant it.
Yeah.
But I guess it's all contextual.
Sure. You know the tone of voice being hurled at you, I think. So it's all from this guy and his dog. I thought his name was going to be Jack Dandy.
You'd think, right?
Well, you said you were going to earlier.
Yeah. I'm gonna.
I know. I got there too soon, I guess.
So, yeah. There are some fun little rhymey songs. And these are old.
With an E at the end?
Yeah. Yes. we dig up much older than this. But, okay. Yeah. We're talking 1600s.
Yeah.
And so.
That's our home zone.
Let me give you a couple of these.
Okay.
Smart she is and handy, oh. Sweet as sugar candy, oh, fresh and gay as flowers in May, and I'm her jack-a-dandy, oh.
Oh, nice.
I know, right? But it gets better.
Okay.
My love is blithe and buxom. I just stopped me in my tracks.
Always.
And sweet and fine as can be, fresh and gay as flowers in May, and looks like jack-a-dandy.
Huh.
Now, on the surface, they can be fun little songs about your love.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But because this word walked both sides of the fence.
Oh.
Remember me bringing up this thing about, hey there, Georgie girl, there's another Georgie deep inside?
Yeah.
That song from the
60s? Yeah.
That I always say, that's a song about, you know, a fellow that, you know, he feels different ways.
Yeah.
And in the 60s, you didn't really just put things out there about drugs or anything. You sort of wrote it.
Yeah, in the lyrics. That's
yeah, you wrote
all
it.
All the mamas and the papas stuff.
The mamas
by
and the
me.
Papas.
My Lord.
So, hey there, Georgie girl. So, I think these songs were hey there, Georgie girl songs of the day.
Yeah.
So, jack-a-dandy, yeah. So, there's where that came in, although there's a lot of that, and I won't, not the song so much as the jack-a-dandy, the this and that-a-dandy, and even jack-a-dandy for a little bit got cross-pollinated with jack-o'-lantern, which we covered.
We did. What year is the jack-a-dandy? I'm sorry.
We're talking, you know, mid-1600s.
Okay, sorry.
Some of these words that created dandy as it is, like I said, went back to really old pieces. Some pieces from French and Italy. These are some joyful ones. I'm going to give you a dondolare.
Right.
Okay, and this was to sway, walk, dangle, swing, and nod. And similarly from Italy, dorlinia, which if you look at, looks like dodeliner.
Yeah, okay.
These words meant that same thing, and they were apparently part of the lineage that created the idea of dandy and the idea of the dwarf and the walking funny and the swaying. That turned into the effeminate guy while simultaneously meaning you're just sharp and happy.
Yeah, you're looking good. Yeah,
yeah, everything's good.
Right.
Simultaneous. So all of those things and definitions and experiences and perversions of the words conspired to mean multitudes of things. And when we got it, now they got it. When we got it in America, and I can't quite see how it made the jump, but obviously it came over in the 18th century and has been here ever since.
Possibly,
different.
Yeah.
Well, if the Yankee Doodle Dandy was here, it was always here.
True. It started. Yeah. Right. You're right. Yep.
But somewhere the baseball people took it and they threw out most of the negative or sarcastic, ironic tones of it. And it just kind of meant good.
Mm-hmm.
These players are Jim Dandy. They put the Jim on it, I guess, to give it a little bit of what?
Just a little extra.
Yeah, a little punch.
Yeah.
And so 1887, 1891, he's a Dandy second base, a Jim Dandy.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of baseball stuff. All up through early 1900s, I bet you made a Jim Dandy good report. So my point is, we had it all as good, and it always sort of has been.
Yeah.
I wonder what our listeners feel. I know if I use Dandy, I know I sometimes will use it like that's not, but it's more like, you order the right, the wrong light bulbs, and you open the box and you get a case of light bulbs that are wrong. Oh, that's just Dandy. I would use it like that.
Yeah.
Sort of meaning, I'm saying,
saying
it's Dandy,
oh,
but it isn't.
Oh, good. That's how I say it.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
But that idea.
Yeah.
So, that's my history of Dandy. Use it how you want to use it. I don't see any, it isn't like Spade that there's any reason to throw it out. It was and it wasn't.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, it had that, but same as like the Brits used it as a slight.
Mm-hmm.
We said, no, I'm going to use it. We're going to take that and use it. So I say if you want to use it, it's fine to use. And just, there's some more. It's got a...
tone of voice is always important.
Yeah, it's got a background.
Yeah. It's good to know so you know how to use it properly.
Yeah. Like you might use something from the Clemente Museum.
Or Big Science.
Or Big Science.
Support Whole Nine Yards and make your life easier with Instacart. Online grocery shopping made simple. Instacart connects you with personal shoppers in your area to shop and deliver groceries from your favorite stores in a single order. Products you love from local stores, hand-selected based on your preferences. Many items may be delivered in as little as an hour. Instacart helps to save you money on your favorite items and recommends new products that you might also love. Instacart, the most convenient way to shop. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by the Roberto Clemente Museum. Located in a restored engine house in Pittsburgh's revitalized Lawrenceville neighborhood, the Clemente Museum is a showcase of the largest exhibited collection of baseball artifacts, works of art, literature, photographs, and memorabilia related to Roberto Clemente and his life in baseball. Shop the store for clothing and other items featuring the iconic 21 logo, and purchase tour tickets for the museum at clementemuseum.com. Enter promo code W9Y21 for a 10% discount on hats and tees. That's clementemuseum.com, promo code W9Y21. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
All right, hey, we're back.
Hey, we're back.
Yeah.
Here we are.
These are happy words.
Yeah. They're good words, whatever, happy words.
Or basically, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, good.
Good. Good. Excellent. Yes.
The umbrella is happy, I guess.
Yeah.
And your phase two, chapter two, back end, second word of happy is?
Okay. Big O, little K.
Not like okie dokie.
Well, I mean, sure. We'll add it in at the end. This one is rich with heritage. So I've said that like six times already, I think. So I'm going to just brush upon some of the high-level theories. One seemingly, again, to me, makes sense. Other ones make sense, too.
Are you going to tell us up front? I mean, do we land on a defined absolute, or are they all theories?
It still seems like it's up for debate, I guess. But people tend to agree that they've figured it out. I did the both. It's both one and two. People have agreed the consensus is something else. Is one of these.
Yes. Experts agree.
Experts have agreed. And there's extensive research into this, actually.
Let's enjoy it.
Which is why I'm giving you the highlights.
Yeah.
Okay. This word, you know, everything is good, adequate, acceptable, right?
Yes.
It has been described as the most frequently spoken or written word on the planet. It is what folks consider a loan word, which kind of, again, lends itself to where I think it starts, which is a word that exists in many languages, meaning the same thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you take a step back, at least how we use it, we use okay to mean, like I said, adequate, like, yeah, it was fine. Or we also mean it to mean good. You know, how are you? I'm doing okay. You know, I'm feeling good. We use it to compare things, to mean mediocre, something. It was okay, you know, but it wasn't good.
Right. We do that.
And we use it to mean almost as a physical seal of approval. Like, we got the okay to move forward on this project. You know, you get an okay. You get something. Right?
Yeah.
So it's one of the words that we have that fills a lot of gaps, I guess. That was just fun aside.
Sure, no.
But like I said, there's a lot of theories and there's a lot of research into this. A man, Alan Walker Reed. So he's another bookman. We got a Reed who was
R-E-A-D.
R-E-A-D. It nice. could be Red, I guess. But he was an etymologist, a studier of the words. And he, it looks like he has six or so papers written that he wrote in the 1963 for American Speech, where he says the first use comes to us from the Boston Morning Post, 23rd March, 1839. The quote doesn't really have much, you know, to it, but the author uses O period K, and he writes dash all correct after the words, as if he's saying to the reader, O period K means all correct to the reader. And this is March 1839. Like, okay, we'll say it. But why OK for words
right
that start AC?
Yeah.
Right? Why isn't it AC? Why don't we say AC for all correct then?
Right. That would make more sense.
Well, Mr. Reed goes on to say that at the time of this expression's first appearance in the print, as we know, time being a flat circle, there was a broad fad in the United States where they essentially had their own versions of chat speak and text speak and internet speak, where they would misspell things for fun and use letters to abbreviate phrases.
Those kooky nuts.
And this was taking off in 1830s Boston, 1840s Boston. There's a few like OFM, Our First Men, NG, No Go, GT, Gone to Texas. I'm not sure why that one, but SP for Small Potatoes. So many of these abbreviated expressions were just literal, you know, first letters of sentences. Some were exaggerated misspellings. So there were other versions of this all correct, which were misspelled as OLL KORRECT or when I saw Ole Kurek, OleKurrecK, and even a predecessor of OK was OW for All Right, OLLWRIHGHT. He goes on to say that he thinks that these may be a result of the influx of non-English speakers hearing English words and spelling them differently as well. So it may not have been, you know, just for fun. It's also a result of, you know, just
phonetic
blending together. Yeah, yeah. This is like, it sounds like to me, this is what you said. So I'm writing down OLLKORRICT, you know,
right,
basically, because I'm, yeah. There's a lot of information by Mr. Reed. So there's a lot there. That's just kind of like brushing on what I thought were the highlights and fun parts of that. Another theory that predates the 1840s Boston text speak lineage is that of the Choctaw Indians,
yeah.
Native Americans.
Choctaw.
Yeah. Their word OKEH translates to "it is so." We know that there were Americans living in these areas with the Choctaw and Native Americans, and they would have adopted these, you know, languages and tried to learn them. And we know that there were specific missionaries, a man named Cyrus Byington and Alfred Wright, who worked on creating dictionaries and books and spellings, words, and like hymn books for American English speakers to learn the Choctaw language, Choctaw language. So they defined this word, OKEH, in these works in the 1825s, but I mean, this language has existed for hundreds of years before, obviously. And I think this group of Native Americans lived in the southeastern United States, what we consider that right now, and Boston being in the northeastern side. I could see things maybe traveling up the coast through writings and things like that. So I could see the Choctaw being the reason, the real definition behind it, I guess, but seeing the other routes to be possible of the misspellings and mishearings of also non-native English speakers that were coming in. Does that make sense? No?
I mean, for one thing, I thought it was older than that. I thought it was way much older.
I mean, this, the...
So the odd AFs and BTWs type speaking that we, I guess, did,
yeah,
and propagated through writings and newsprint.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were a journalist, you were primed to start those off because no one else had that power, you know? So you just started one in
right.
print.
Right.
Everyone had to read it.
Sure.
They couldn't write one back.
No, it's like that test stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just, yeah. So... The Native American one, I guess, could have jumped over, you know, jumped the line into English more easily.
Oh, for sure.
And it already had the meaning with it.
Right.
So,
and there were books. That's kind of what I'm driving at, is this word really, I believe, started in this language and then propagated through us. I recognize that the misspellings and things like could have been also happening in mishearings, but it seems like, yeah, that this word existed in the American country before we got here, anyway, for sure. I say we. Well before we got here.
I know we've had a number of listeners write in wanting us to do this one, and I had never looked into it either, so it's curious to me.
More. There's more too. I just was pausing to say if I was making sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and there's again more information in this subheading as well. I'm just going to move on to a different theory.
Okay.
This theory, it seems like the weakest theory. It came from the Van Buren boys.
Those.
Martin Van Buren was referred to as Old Kinderhook in the political races.
All right.
He was born in Kinderhook, New York.
There you go.
And they were said to be trying to draw attention away from, he was Dutch, the Van Buren. They wanted to, the Van Buren on a poster didn't sell as well as Old Kinderhook, I guess.
I see.
Back in the 1840s.
Yeah.
So Yeah, old Kinderhook was everywhere. Okay was everywhere. They used it on, you know, ads on print things and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was definitely plastered around the country at the same time, pretty much everywhere at the same time from these different angles. 1825 books. There's 1839 newspaper writings. This is 1840s. I mean, so we're really just like, here's this word. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Those are the three larger theories. There's other, some West African.
How would old Kinderhook cross over into meaning everything's good?
Or? They used it in propaganda. I don't want to be rude, but in ads that mean he was good and, you know, okay is okay, basically.
Okay. He defined it with himself.
I didn't
old
make it.
Old Kinderhook is old Kinderhook. Is that what they're saying?
Well, they're meaning it to mean he's okay. He's good. He's solid. He's adequate. He's adequate. Yeah.
All right.
But there's more information in every one of those headings.
Sure. No.
For sure. That was just the delights, and I really do believe it was from the Chata or Choctaw, whichever one you want to go with.
Oh yeah, I hear him say Choctaw, but I never looked it up.
Oh,
plus, it's also in that, you know, I have it from a, you know, Billy Joe McAllister song about the thing, you know. So that's the Choctaw Ridge.
Gotcha.
Tallahassee Bridge and the Choctaw Ridge.
I hit the CH too hard.
Mm.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what do you have?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay.
Ha!
Okay.
I'm happy as a lark.
It's like that too. No, I was going to say that too. It's like a question. That was one of my things.
Okay.
Like, okay? Like you're trying to get information from somebody. This word is so versatile. So what do you have?
I have happy as a lark.
Happy as a lark.
Yeah. So, you know, happy as a lark. You're happy.
Happy.
Yeah. And why? Why? Why as a lark?
Are they happy birds?
I mean, you know, did the coot was the coot more, you know,
less happy maybe.
Doofy acting or
than a pigeon?
Than the pigeon?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who's to say?
What people choose. But there are some things that might make you ponder. Certainly make me ponder. It's a funny thing I didn't realize. See, so it's a ground-dwelling songbird.
Oh.
Ground-dwelling.
They don't live in nests. Can they can fly, though, or no? Yeah.
Well, that's your skylark.
Okay. A Buick.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So there was a sweet old sort of sardonic a phrase from old yore that I came across. It was funny to me. That was sort of a response to an overly optimistic person that said, oh yes, and when the sky falls, we'll catch larks. So as to say, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny.
It's like the whole when the frog had wings, he wouldn't bump his butt when he hopped. I'll say butt.
Sure. But I mean,
yeah.
I enjoy imagining moments in time where people now long dead had these exchanges.
Yeah.
Yes. But
I give my cat to the tongue. Oh, no, I messed it up. Damn it.
I throw my tongue to the cat.
Yeah.
Which one was that? That was a good
cat,
one.
Cat's got your tongue.
Cat got your tongue. Of course it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny about this lark business because... there are different ways that we use this, and some things, the owls are not what they seem. The skylarking, for example, there's several that I could have traced back to our nautical friends.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to go all there, including lark itself. But skylarking was apparently a term, you know, with the pirates. Imagine Johnny Depp again and his buddy again, Keith Richards. Horsing around
right.
with swords and ropes up in the upper pieces of the sailing ship up there. What
like
do you call
on the deck?
That?
Or huh? up and up?
No,
top,
way up
the
there.
The crow's nest?
Yeah, and okay. you know, and all those sticks sticking up there and
masts?
Ropes. Yeah.
Yeah. jib lines and stuff.
Yeah.
Come on, we're sailors. No, you're...
I am not a sailor, but okay. That was called skylarking.
Fighting up in up there.
Yeah, they weren't fighting.
Oh,
see, remember
being,
it's
you said they were sword
it's,
fighting.
But it's Johnny and his buddy Keith. They're playing.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of to frolic or play.
I see.
Yeah. But since they were frolicking and playing as fellows up in the you know
sky.
Well, I mean, imagine they're kind of like trees. To sailors, you know, that's the closest you got to a tree is your, what you call it there? Your mast. So.
Look, it's got a basic sailing knowledge there.
I put my water stick in and pushed it. So,
yeah. The mast.
All right.
Right, okay. I hear what you're saying.
So anyway, you all got right. that.
Yeah, for, so we're, I mean, we're up in the trees, swashbuckling.
I mean, those.
Or friendly buckling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, etymologically speaking, lark was, again here, more of a verb. This word, too, traces back to Old English and Germanic. Man, I tried to get pronunciations of this, and the little speaker woman on several areas was not friendly to me. But and the phonetics are useless as well, because it's one syllable. It's... the word looks like lake,
okay.
L-A-K-E and L-A-I-K, but I understand it to be an implied sort of R in there, or almost like lock.
Okay, to kind of give you that lark vibe of the word.
Yeah,
okay.
And to hear where how it morphed into lark in English that followed.
Mm-hmm.
But this meant to leap, to play, to spring up, and that was way back then. So the sense that lark itself, happy as a lark, would necessarily mean happy as the bird, because
yeah.
the bird's song sounds fun and happy, maybe, you know.
That's why I made
it. Was
okay.
crazy as a loon. I like the loon song, but people say it's crazy.
Haunting.
So it's, that's one still out there for the jury, as it were.
Is there... Did you find any information that said that the playfulness is why the lark is named that? Because of the song it sings? Okay.
No.
Okay.
Good question, though.
Thank you.
I'll go ahead and give you that 18th century use for a small boat in a narrow sphere of our history. A lark was used.
Okay. a very small sliver.
Yeah.
Time.
But... There are several other permutations and historic roots of lark and its evolution, and one of them actually has a definition that leaks its way to treason. And I went down that path a while and found those trees fruitless, and so I came back.
That's good. Thank you.
But if you were to research this word yourself... you too would be handed that ruse fruit. So
don't go down that path.
Yeah. The treason thing is kind of useless. So the thing to keep in mind about, so is it the bird, happy as a lark?
Mm-hmm.
Just the bird, really? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Or is it this history of this old world word that's also lark that meant to frolic, to spring up with joy, etc.
Yeah,
which is very old, and was there as well.
I'm picking door number two.
Right, and then you get
it's the third door.
Our use that's on a lark. He's on a lark.
Mm-hmm.
Or on a lark.
I've heard. Yeah,
I went over to
right.
You know, so and so's house, and you know, caught them with my wife. Whatever it is, you know. So.
Right.
I don't know. You know, whatever happens.
Whatever you.
It's a, you
however
you,
one.
It was on a lark.
Yeah.
That you
on
went
a
there.
Whim.
And yeah, as it were.
Yeah.
Sort of, but the lark, more or less implying. So get this.
Okay.
A use of it, 19th century use of it. My mother once, by way of a lark, invited her to tea. So, you know, saying she wouldn't normally maybe invite this woman, or, you know, but on a lark, she did, right?
On a gag.
Well,
you think? You think it was meant as a joke?
No, I don't feel it like that as much as it was as she came out of herself a little bit, took a little bit more.
Okay.
See, it was more of a playful decision on her part.
I gotcha.
That she might not have ordinarily made.
Mm-hmm.
A brief but daring departure from routine, a flight of fancy.
Oh, well, I would, yes. Perfect. You know? Yes.
A forbidden or fun, harmless prank. And to lark, again, it being a verb, which I, you know, still you gotta see it that way, to frolic or play. So I, happy as a lark, I decide what you want. I think the lark is a pleasant sounding happy bird, but it may not be the true reason that we say happy as a lark.
Almost like we're adding the happy onto something that already means that.
Yeah, and it's a word that had that other definition, and so you kind of, I don't know, it's like of convenience, we just combined that and created that. Because you got happy as a pig in mud or whatever, you got a...
Happy as a clam. We did
the happy
one.
As a clam at high tide, I think.
Right, that's right? How it went. Exactly. Nice.
So we like to do that, and that's your lark.
Lark.
There you go.
Nice. Well, some happy, happy times.
They were happy.
Yeah. Well, I think we did okay.
Huh. No, that's just Andy.
Just Andy, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we already invited people to, subscribe, review us,
whatever,
send us a thing if you like us and we teach you anything. We're learning.
Yeah, every day.
Every day. So hope to hear from you all those ways. And I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
And we're not idioms.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@wholenineyards.org. That's heyyou@wholenumber9yards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.